Let's talk a little CFL. It sounded like a lot of the players had a broken heart on Saturday when our next guest broke the story that the CFL and the CFLPA had agreed to a new deal, pending, of course, ratification. Matthew Schinetti from TSN joins us. Matt, a lot of the players were upset, especially players on Western-based teams, which makes me wonder if they think they've got it better or worse than guys playing on the Eastern teams. Were you surprised by so much negativity coming from a lot of the Western-based players?
I'm not at all, Jason. It's good to talk to you. The fact is, when you look at a lot of the healthier CFL franchises, they come from West, obviously. And when I spoke to my sources originally as these conversations were beginning, many of them spoke about the profits in Calgary, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg. And they focused in on that when speaking about the revenue sharing system that they had. Although in that original system, with the, one of the original proposals, the highest grossing teams and the lowest grossing teams would have canceled each other out and not been part of that system. But that's all in the past now. It doesn't even matter because of the tentative agreement. It's the $27 million revenue protection clause. I think that's really frustrating a lot of players because. And since, too, that it would activate only in the third year of any new deal, because they see it maybe as a bridge too far away for them. But what I'm getting a sense of now and talking to my sources and players across the league, I find it hard to say a lot of players are frustrated. I would like to say the most vocal players in the league, I think, are frustrated. Yeah. We don't know yet how many are frustrated, because that'll come down when the ratification vote comes down, maybe as early as Wednesday, or probably later Thursday or Friday this week. And the key here is to remember, the 6 of 9 teams have to vote in the affirmative. And in those teams, 50% plus one of the players have to vote yes in order for the deal to be ratified from team to team. So that's something to keep in mind when trying to judge where the players' emotions are right now.
Matt, explain to our listeners the details of that $27 million protection that the players aren't fans of.
Okay, so in any new deal, this came... during 10 days ago when the two sides met in Toronto, the league, understanding the players wanted some kind of protection, went ahead and said, okay, we will institute this clause. Players later called it the revenue protection clause, that if in the third year of a deal, if the aggregate revenues in the league exceeded $27 million or were increased $27 million for the previous year, then they would reopen the league and the players would reopen talks about the salary cap and maybe some other collective bargaining mechanisms. It doesn't necessarily mean that a $27 million, the cap would shoot up. It means that the league and the players would sit down and, in concept, renegotiate part of the CBA. Now, that sounds a little strange, but both sides did agree. The one thing they did agree on, regardless of the number, they said, we put this in so that if the league, if a new television deal comes in or new sources of revenue comes in, or the revenue from the stadiums come in and they increase so much so that the league is really profiting and the players would share in that. Now, how much they would share in, what percentage that would be discussed if that clause was ever active. Makes it seem as if they ever do hit $27 million and you're basically just reopening the CBA negotiations, and it would get even more tense because players would know how much the league is making. But at this point, what's frustrating the players is they think that $27 million threshold is way too high. Remember, 10 days ago, they wanted it at $12 million, and then they wanted it at $18 million. But my sources were saying when the league offered this deal through their backdoor channels, when negotiations through the third-party mediator were taking place on the weekend, they went ahead and said, this $27 million, we still feel it's enough protection. Now, the problem you face is that $12 million and $18 million threshold the players originally wanted. Well, why did they go that low? Why not try to meet in the middle before? I think that in terms of the frustration that many of the players are feeling across the country, that is what it's stemming from. That the players, in some cases, shot too high in what they desired. And at the end of the day, really, it on the surface, to those frustrated, it appears they didn't get that much.
Matthew Schinetti from TSN joins us. And yeah, I understand the frustration from some players. I'm surprised that players who are rookies have an equal vote compared to guys who have played in the league. Guys who have never collected a CFL paycheck are voting on this. To me, that's very unique.
Yes, it all depends on how you see it, particularly when it came to strike votes. The there was the perception from the league that rookies should vote on strike votes because they should have a say. And this is all now also the case in the ratification vote, because if, at least from the players, even though these players, American or Canadian, have not, it's funny, they have not signed, in many cases, a certified player contract. They haven't paid dues yet. They are still part of the decision-making process, because if they, the players go on strike and they vote down this ratification and they do not reopen talks to the league and they do go on strike, the players, as I was speaking to one player today, everyone is going to stay off. The players, at least on one particular team that I, the rep on one particular team I was speaking to, said, if the rookies are voting, we're going to make sure they stay off too, even though they're not technically members yet. If they're getting a vote, they're also going to have to participate in the strike. So that's, they get the responsibility of helping make the decision. But in the end, if it doesn't go the way they want, they're going to have to be part of whatever protest the players do or do not take part in.
Moving ahead, Matthew, it seemed like, you know, the guys in Hamilton, the independent owners, right? Braley has two teams. You got Wettenhall, you got Young. I think those guys are just sick of losing money. And I'm not sure this deal guarantees they make money, but it likely looks like they will lose less money or maybe break even.
You know, this is, and I think you bring up an interesting point, Jason, because on the surface, so many people have been framing this, whether it be fans or media or players, have been framing this as a deal where the players undoubtedly lose. And I tend to disagree. On the short term, given what the players wanted, the 6.24 salary cap or the 5.8, whatever, it appears that $5 million going up $50,000, it appears that they lose. But remember, this cap, if it does turn out that this is the deal, is going up $600,000 from $4.4 million last season to $5 million. That's not counting the ratification bonus that could come in. Remember, it's $7,500 for vets and then $1,500 for the rookies. So all that considered, the owners are still spending a significant amount of money. And then you look at what the players might gain in a very, very crucial but not as talked about aspect here, is the elimination of the option year. It has been, and I've spoken to very powerful agents in the CFL who've said, we have waited, one agent told me, we have waited 30 years for that option year to just be gone. Because then what it does, it adjusts the marketplace. If players have a good enough agent, or they're great enough by themselves at negotiating, they can get a higher, they can get a higher wage. They can see what the market bears, and the market will start to adjust given that those option years are gone. Contracts could be 1 year for non-rookies or whatever. And I think that's very significant, because not in the long, long, long term, but I think over the life of this deal, if this is the deal that gets ratified, the players will stand to benefit. And although it doesn't seem that way right now, and there are some reports now apparently coming out of Ottawa that the players will begrudgingly vote to ratify the deal, I think that that is what the CFLPA executives are trying to do today. Sources told me that several of the executives were going to team visits across the country, not necessarily to convince the players to vote for the CBA, but to educate them on what's going on, to, as one source told me, to get some face time, to open dialogue, to build bridges that maybe the PA should have done months and months ago, but knows it has to do now in order to get that yes vote.
Matthew Shinetti from TSN joins us. And the thing about this year's salary cap, though, Matthew, really is irrelevant, because 99% of the contracts are already signed. So they're getting their money back in the ratification. And so it's more so the cap's going to be basically, you know, $5 million and $50,000 next year. One of the other things that's going to be passed, I wrote an article about it today in the Edmonton Journal that got a lot of people upset at me, which is fine, that I believe the one mistake that both the league and the Players Association made in this negotiation was when they expanded the rosters by two, they added another Canadian. Because now that's 29 new players when you add in Ottawa, that the league, 29 new Canadians. And I love the CFL. I love the junior football rank, CIS. There's a lot more quality players at the top. But the depth of Canadian football players still isn't there to, in one season, have an almost 19% increase in Canadian talent. And that, to me, is a concern.
Yeah, and that's another aspect of this that I think will get flushed out if this deal gets ratified, is the roster spots. Not only that, the practice roster spots as well. Those will, at this point, those will increase, I believe, by two or three as well. It's all the mechanisms in terms of roster will be interesting, because you know, you talk about a dearth of Canadian talent. I mean, one situation that we know very well right now, one team that's going through that is Winnipeg. So how do you adjust for that when a team is already struggling to find talented Canadians or Canadians that's willing to field and start at the moment? So many people are focusing solely, and players too, unfortunately. And even today, I was getting blowback from Nick Lewis and Ricky Foley, who seem to completely be obsessed. And these are established guys and loud guys who completely seem to be obsessed with this salary cap number. It's not just that. And maybe that's a function of not everyone seeing, especially the players, not seeing everything on the table, everything in an actual physical document. And that's going to happen, I believe, in the next 36 hours. The lawyers are just working out all the legal terms and trying to solidify all the language. And when that happens, and I've been told by my sources, the players will be given some time. So every player will be given time and every kind of access to read what is actually written so they can make an informed choice. Because ultimately, when you consider roster, when you consider salary, when you consider everything that's part of this deal, the players do stand to benefit. Whether or not there is a dearth of Canadian talent, and there may not be enough talented Canadians to go around, the players do benefit ultimately from this. And over the long term, this is, as Peter Dajkowski told me, he's a rep for the Ticats, said today, we do benefit from this without any bloodshed. Then the second breath, he said, in my gut, I know how I think the Ticats will ratify this. I know the Ticats will ratify this. Whether or not they will ratify this deal across the league, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. J.C. Sherrod here in Edmonton said, you know, and he's going to tell all his teammates to vote for it. He thinks it's a good deal. I think you'll have some vocal guys, but I think ultimately 6 out of 9 teams are going to be at 50 plus one, so 51%, whatever number we want to use. And I think it'll get done. I'd be very, very surprised. A lot of guys are vocal about it till they read the whole thing front to back and have it explained to them in detail, which leads me then to getting on the football field. Quickly, looking at the teams, which team do you think has the biggest turnaround from last season, which positively, and which team do you think has the biggest turnaround negatively?
I won't say negatively, but it's going to be interesting to see how the Montreal Alouettes turn around. Without Anthony Calvillo, with some injuries still to key players like Jamel Richardson, and with the addition of Chad Johnson and the addition of a brand new head coach and Tom Higgins, who Jim Popp wasn't involved in the decision-making process of. It's going to be interesting to see what the next step for the Alouettes is. This is a long, very proud franchise since they came back into the league. I think that they have even more maybe than the Red Blacks, who have an established quarterback, although they do have questions throughout their lineup. They do have established Canadians like Keith Shulligan on the defensive line. They do have Henry Burris behind center. They do have some established offensive linemen. What happens in Montreal with a new coach, new quarterback, maybe a new offense? It all depends on how Troy Smith operates in that offense. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. And I really hate to stick out east because there have been a lot of strides made, particularly in right there in Edmonton. This team could be a very talented team, but I have to tell you, I look at the Hamilton Tiger Cats and how deep they are at Canadian in several positions. They could play a lot of, they could start across their team. They could start 12 or 13 Canadians and be very competitive. This is a team coming off the Grey Cup. And when you compare what they've done to the other Grey Cup team, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, who have a lot of question marks, what's going to happen without Weston Dresser? What's going to happen without Corey Sheets? I see the Ticats right now as my provisional favorite to come out of the East and to win the Grey Cup. But to be honest with you, Jason, I'm glad you asked that question because I would much rather be talking football right now and dissecting what's to come in July than banging my head against the numbers and a lot of frustrations across the league. But we'll just have to wait and see once this when and if this this deal gets ratified.
Yeah, I would think it gets done before the weekend, and we move on, and then we can break down the X and O's. Matthew, great work on breaking the story. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Jason. Have a good day.